I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hey, football fans. Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-20. 25 and 1526 terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
I'm Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we talk about things that are just make us say, what the fuck? That's about it.
And loading up the swear jar. Preload. I'm putting $40 in right now. That's how many swears I anticipate.
Wow.
We're going to be seeing this episode. You don't think I'm just not just taking the same money out and putting it in over and over again?
I know.
Sometimes. No, there's some money in here. Like I put some in on
behalf of Starbucks. Starbucks baristas usually preload.
Yeah, so well, I have a couple singles at the bottom and then I have the 20s at the top, so it looks like more than it is. It's a strategy, you know. Always be selling. Yeah.
Okay, well, this is going to be a mega fucking episode.
Yes.
That's all I could say.
Yes.
Because we have so much to talk about. And
I was texting you so much news in the last couple of days. I was like, I'm sorry.
Both so busy, too. And like, I was like getting your text and I'm like, oh, God, I can't look at this right now. But right off the top, let me just say thanks to all the tippers. We love you guys. And all the people that have signed up for memberships and have done super chats. Again, bear with us. Have some patience. We're still figuring out how YouTube works. We are going to do a live here pretty soon. I don't know when.
Yeah.
But we'll let you know. And then we'll figure out, you know, how to deal with all the comments and super chats and stuff like that. And if you are only listening to this and you would like to tip us because you love us and you know how much work we put into this, the Venmo is at Mel Barrett Writes, and it's Barrett is spelled with two R's and two T's, and Writes is like handwriting.
Yep.
So Mel Barrett Writes, send over the tips. We really appreciate you.
Look at the graphic right here that she just put here because I told her to. Yes.
She loves to direct the graphics.
I do. I'm not doing post-production on this, so I know I'm creating work for you, and I'm very sorry, but when you mention the monetization of the show by listeners who have been so generous and so want to support us, put up the graphic, make it easy. Yeah.
Okay. So one thing I want to say before we get into all this, because we have sort of a list of things to talk about, but I think all of you know that we're going to be talking about this new complaint filed by Karen Reed against all of the defendants, all of them.
Well, most of them. Some are going to be added later, to be clear.
Yeah. I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. If this helps you in any way, if you don't have the patience to sit down and read, I am going to be recording a reading of the entire 46-page complaint, and it will be out on the In Between podcast tomorrow.
Wow.
It will be out on the In Between podcast Friday, the same day that this episode comes out.
Okay. It's interesting.
So if you want to reference it.
I don't want to like toot my own horn, but I was on Court TV last night talking about this.
Yes, you were.
And they had a producer read some of the complaint, and I had read the whole thing thoroughly twice.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best written civil complaints I've ever read. And it's just extremely, when I say that, I mean it's extremely readable, it's extremely clear. It's like if someone knew nothing about the Karen Reed case and wanted to understand all the suspicion into it, like this is a really good primer.
This is it, yep.
Because it doesn't get into, there's so many things that could have been in here that aren't, but it's like the basics of the cop stuff and the basics of the house defendant stuff. And it's just,
yes,
it's really, really good. But they had somebody read portions of it, producer, and I was like sitting here, I was just waiting to talk. And I was like, wow, that really is kind of juicy. It makes a good audio product.
Well, that's the reason why I decided to read it, because it actually, it reads like an opening or a closing statement. in court, but it's also really good storytelling and it's easy to read. So I was like, well, you know, I can probably do all 46 pages. Of course, my voice is like a little bit hoarse today, but yeah, I plan to have the entire complaint on the In Between podcast, which I will link to in the show notes. So
good for you.
Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So last time we were together, we talked about that piece of tape. I don't know if it was the last time or the time before. Recently we were together. We talked about that piece of tape that Lindsay Gaetani shared on her Twitter, which was Leah Genduso, whose yes. history I will not go into right now, left her a message or sent her a voice memo in like late 2023 saying, I can't believe I didn't think about this before. What you need to do, and by the way, we know that tape was staticky. That's how it came. We didn't make it staticky. I can't believe I didn't think of this before. You need to call Mello, Ken Mello, special prosecutor in Aidan Carney's case, and get him to make you a witness. And that way, Aidan Carney will be so afraid that he's going to be arrested. By the way, I am paraphrasing, that he will leave you alone. So I wasn't wrong that this was important tape. It was.
Yeah.
So a couple of things have happened in the Turtle Boy Aidan Carney case. Now, the cases that are still alive against him in Massachusetts are the witness intimidation cases against the McAlberts and then also the window case where he looked into the pizza shop and talked into the camera. So there was supposed to be, they had filed a motion to dismiss in that case a while back, the so-called mega motion. Hi, Ruby. And there was supposed to be a response due by the prosecutor, who is now Cosgrove, whole different prosecutor, because Mello has had to recuse himself. And right. Also, I guess he's ill. And that response now, as of this taping, I think it's been 4 days. It just hasn't been filed. Not only did he miss the deadline, but there's been no filing to explain missing the deadline. There's been no correspondence
right.
To the defendant's team, Turtle Boy's team, saying this is what we... Nothing. It's just been silence. And there's still a hearing, like, scheduled in a few days, I think. But, like... This is just silence. And so they filed yet another motion that I read in that case saying, you know, we now have a bunch of stuff that wasn't disclosed by the Commonwealth, including, and they included a centerpiece of this, that piece of audio. And apparently right. also Lindsay Gaetani has emailed Turtle Boy and his team some stuff, some emails that
good
more
for you, Gaetani.
I agree. And I know it's like, it is, like I said, very difficult and will be difficult for her if she ever decides to roll back her rape accusation. It will right. be. She didn't do that. Unfortunately, if there like wasn't so much evidence she didn't do it, I could be more circumspect about it, but she didn't. I mean, he didn't. And she, I don't think is, I follow her on Twitter. I don't know her personally. It seems like she is full guns blaring around Jen McCabe, Kate Peter, yep. Everybody that's fucked her over, the cops, you know, Mello, Cosgrove, Morrissey, and she still can't cross that Rubicon. So I don't know if we'll ever see that. So I don't know if we'll ever see, like, Lindsay Gaetani appears on Turtle Club. I don't know if that will happen, but she has forwarded him some very incriminating stuff that was not part of their disclosure. So now there's this whole other reason to dismiss. So I'm hoping, I mean, who knows? Maybe by the time this comes out, the case will be dismissed, but I think it will be dismissed. I really do. Right. And I think that him not filing the response yeah. is that signal. And I did say, by the way, when the McAlberts put out their statement a few days ago, well, that they were saying that they intended to sue Karen Reed. I thought one of two things. They know something's coming. That's yes. what I thought immediately.
They knew already.
The thing that I thought they knew was coming that day was I thought maybe they had been told that the charges against Turtle Boy were going to be dismissed because he was also named in that
right.
statement of intent or whatever it was to file a lawsuit. So we know that Lindsay Gaetani was told that in advance of the charges being dropped in the case around her. So I thought maybe they had gotten that call about his case. I think that I'm not sure that they haven't been gotten that call, but I think what actually happened was they were served notice of the lawsuit that Karen Reed was about to file against them. And so this was their warning shot across the bow situation that I almost can guarantee is not going to materialize into an actual lawsuit. Anyway, so that's what's going on in the Aidan Carney case. I think it's super interesting that there's just been no reply. It's very much in line with the pattern of the Commonwealth. That being said, usually there's some milquetoasty thing that's like, hey. But now they have one judge who's been assigned to the case, who apparently is a very reasonable judge, who is no longer being any of this courtroom hopping stuff. Like this. Yep. So anyway, that's where we are with that.
Yeah, I think just to add one thing to it, I think it actually has been verified that the McAlberts actually received the complaint and then put out that statement.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in response. And it was just before everybody else was able to read all of the accusations.
Because stuff gets docketed on the public side and then the files come out. But it's docketed like the end of the business day or the next business day. Right. And when you are served with a suit, like you are typically the first one to see that suit. Having someone in my house participating in a civil suit, I've seen how this goes. So anyway.
Yeah. Okay. The next updates, this should be pretty quick, but you know, we talked pretty in depth about Brian Walsh in one episode, and then we gave some updates about the final pretrial hearing before he goes on trial for murder, the murder of his wife, Anna Walsh. So this week they were choosing jury, they were picking the jury, but something sort of explosive happened because on the first day that they were picking jurors, he walked in and he pled guilty to two of the three counts. Specifically misleading a police investigation and improperly conveying a human body, meaning he chopped his wife up.
Or something. There's no body. We don't know. There's no body. There's no body parts. He did something with the body. Yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is we are still carrying on, however. The trial is supposed to begin on December 1st for murder. But he is saying that he basically obstructed the police investigation and disposed of her body.
Yeah. In Massachusetts, do you know, I know this because my husband and I have written several books together, true crime books.
Good books, too. Everybody should go read them.
I don't know about that. But in our reporting, in at least three, the thing that I learned is that disposing of remains, lying about remains, or not reporting remains that you have discovered is a misdemeanor in the state of New Hampshire. So you can say this person died. And this is what happened also, by the way, in the Robert Durst Jinx case with his neighbor in Texas, who he probably murdered and dismembered. And there's literally video of him dragging the guy's body out like in a trash bag. I know it's not funny, but it's an absurd imagery.
Well, because he's absurd.
Yeah, and I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think he was found not guilty of any crimes other than disposing of the body, which was not like a huge big deal at the time, because he said the person died by accident or whatever. So I think that might be what's going on here. I don't know what to the level of crime that improperly conveying of a body is in Massachusetts, but I'm guessing it's not that bad because he's clearly changing his story.
The way that I'm understanding it, just by listening to other law tubers, you know, like Peter Tragos, it seems to me like it's a strategy. I would encourage everybody to go watch. I think it was the last live that Peter Tragos did. He did it with his dad, who's a pretty big time attorney. And they broke down, you know, the strategy behind this. And I think part of it has to do with, he wouldn't get life without, I think. I think I understood it to be that. Go watch it for yourself so you understand it. So because I'm not a lawyer. Obviously, even though I play one on TV. The other issue, one of the things that was brought up was that they may just be delaying to see what happens in the trial, because right now Tragos was saying that it seems like the defense kind of knows they're cooked, right? Mm. They have a huge case against them. But if they get into trial and the prosecution feels like they're in trouble, they can offer him a plea at that point, because the prosecution isn't offering him any kind of plea right now for the murder charge.
Right. Why would he plead guilty if there's nothing on the table to do that for? I mean, that's common sense. If you committed a murder and they're not saying, hey, if you just say you did it, you might get out in 40 years instead of the rest of your life or whatever, if they're not offering you anything, of course you're going to plead not guilty. Why would you plead? Why would you admit to anything if there's right. no upside to you admitting something other than doing the right thing and being a good person? But like, you know, it's just it makes sense. It makes total sense.
Yeah. And I think that the idea is also that the defense is obviously going to say that either it was an accident or he killed her in self-defense.
Mm.
Which that's what I think that's what I was talking about with a lesser charge. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know if they can change because it's murder one. So I don't know how they can change to second degree. And then also well, there's
it
no
would
body.
Have to be a plea. It would have to be a plea deal. It would have to right. be like we will offer you, you know, manslaughter yeah. Conviction in and you'll serve this in exchange for your stipulation or allocution in court of whatever you did. Like that's what it would look like. I mean, they can change the charges in a plea deal. You know, one of the cases that we wrote about was a missing body case, and
Mazzalia.
Yeah, Seth Mazzalia, young man who murdered this young woman, Lizzie Marriott. And then he and his girlfriend at the time put her body in a suitcase, took it to a park and the Piscataqua River, which is where the ocean meets the inland river in New Hampshire. It's a huge tidal zone, and pushed her out to sea. And like her remains were never recovered. And so, you know, this is like a lot of stuff came from confession from the girlfriend, Kat McDonough, at the time. So, you know, she was able to say all this stuff. But like, to this day, I mean, he's been trying to get his verdict overturned for a really long time. Not having the body is a huge issue in that case. It has been a huge issue. He's been convicted. So, but it's a huge issue sort of at the core of any doubt that anybody could have if he were ever to be given another trial. So,
well, and I think that there's going to be a huge core of doubt in this trial because of what's being reported about what happened at that building in D.C. Mm. I mean, there are so many scenarios where she could have been murdered by someone else, or she could have been disappeared, you know, or she could have figured out a way to get out of the country or whatever it might have been.
You're not saying this is what happened. You're saying this is what the defense could say happened.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The defense has a lot of options. And then to add Michael Proctor into it, you know, they have a lot of options to help this guy get out of these charges. I don't know Anna Walsh. I never knew Anna Walsh, and I don't pretend to know how she felt about her family, but it's hard for me to believe that she would leave her young children.
Yeah.
You know, because she was already planning to move them to D.C.
It's likely she met an unfortunate end in the presence of Brian Walsh. That is,
yes.
If I were a civil juror right now, looking at the more likely than not standard, that's the way I would lean. That being said, he still has all the rights and protections that you and I have and should have. And if Michael Proctor fucked this up, that's not on Brian Walsh.
Yeah. The only other thing that happened in the Walsh case this week is they're going to impanel 16 jurors. They have 12 primary jurors and they need to add
four.
As of this taping, they need to add four alternates. They think they're going to have that done before Thanksgiving. And then, like I said, December 1st is the trial. Judge Diane Frenier.
We're just going with whatever. Well, until we hear someone say it out loud, like I heard Deitch say in his own ad, we don't know.
That's a scary one. Because that could go so many ways. Judge Diane emphasized that the juror, this is interesting, it's not out of the norm, but it's really heavily, like she's really pushing on this one. She emphasized that the jurors must agree not to be on any social media and not to watch, read, or listen to any news in any form while the trial is going on, which they're expecting it to be 4 to 5 weeks long.
Right. Well, that's always the rule. But the fact that she's stressing it tells me that she's aware of the climate around criminal news involving Michael Proctor in Massachusetts right now.
Well, that and, you know, the defense did ask them to change venues because of the media attention. So there is a lot of media attention on this. I don't think anybody could agree to not watch the news or be on social media for 4 or 5 weeks. I don't see how that's possible in our society unless you're sequestered. But they've found 12 people so far who have completely agreed to that. So we'll see what happens. So that was it with Brian Walsh. There is a major thing that happened this week that you and I are both very excited about. And I'm going to let this one.
I am so excited. Beverly Cannone. In the case of Corey Hopkins, /MarburyvMed versus the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office in her efforts to unseal the many, numerous, and very long sidebars from both Karen Reed trials. She says it's her Roman Empire. Beverly Cannoni has signed off an order saying all the transcripts not involving jurors and juror issues should be transcribed and released, and there is compelling reason for their release. So it looks now like what's happening is the Norfolk County DA's office is agreeing to a stipulation with Hopkins that would make it so they don't have to have another hearing and that they would just agree. So she's got him. She's got him. And I will say Paula Prado, who was on the jury, has said that she would like the juror stuff. She says names can be redacted, but the juror stuff should be out. I want to know if there were issues with me or if there were conversations about me. And she's right. I mean, I think that redacting names and any identifiable information is the right thing to do.
Yes.
But we're not there yet. That being said, we are going to get so much information from these sidebars that is directly applicable to civil case stuff that we won't see for a really long time in the civil case. The civil case timeline is right now it's docketed 2028.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
this one, 2028.
Yeah.
O'Keefe's one is docketed for 2027. But remember, keep in mind, like a lot of the process of these cases is, you know, behind closed doors. It's depositions. It's evidence gathering. It's, you know, it's very different and it's not quite the same level of transparency. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But I think we are going to get so much in these sidebars because we're going to get conversations about evidence that Beverly Cannoni would not let in.
Yes.
And questions that she would not let them ask. And things that witnesses were not allowed to say. Think about what Karina Kolakathis, for instance, was and wasn't allowed to say. Think about what Dr. Lapisato was and wasn't allowed to say. Think about all the people who wanted to opine on something and were like, the garage. Blah, blah, blah. That is all going to be in these sidebars. Any objection? Yeah. Any conversations about objections, and you're going to hear lawyers. I anticipate we're going to have lawyers like Jackson and Yannetti and Alessi saying the reason why they wanted to be able to bring something in. It's going to be, this is going to be like watching the trial all over again. I am so excited about it. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Well, Ani Bibb said, sidebars, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
Finally. Yeah. She said it. I I'm excited about it. It's one of the things that I've always wanted to see. I think that One of the areas where I'm disappointed is that I don't know if we're actually going to find out anything more about the Albert Rock, because that was specific to jurors. So I think that that'll probably be out of there.
You never know.
So anyway, but yeah, Corey Hopkins, her hands are no longer legally tied. The only thing is we're waiting for them to be transcribed, unless they already are transcribed, which we don't know. So we don't know when we're going to get them, but they will be released to the public, and I can't wait to talk about it. It's going to be all new information.
Yeah.
It's going to be information that has been alluded to and we've all discussed, but this is going to be the concrete details of everything that we all knew about the case and the investigation, because a lot of us watched, you know, pretrial hearings and motions and things like that. But it's going to be there, and it's going to be rulings from Bev, and we're going to be able to understand better how that moved testimony,
right,
and what the jury actually saw. And I'm so excited about it.
Me too.
We have one more piece of information about Deitch.
Yes.
I'll let you take that one, and then I have two questions for you.
Yes. So I sent this to you. I sent you his ad, right? And all that. So he has this. So this guy Deitch, his ad name is Adam Deitch. As of, I guess it's 11 days now as we're taping this, 11 days ago, he was working as a prosecutor at the in the Justice Department in Boston. So this is the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston. He was a prosecutor.
Cushy job.
He worked for Josh Levy, and now he's been working for who's the name woman's name we took over for him?
Idea.
He's worked there as of 11 days ago. He worked there. He was involved in the investigation around the John O'Keefe death, which
the misconduct
is widely believed to actually be an investigation into Michael Morrissey's office or the cops or something bigger that the John O'Keefe case came into play in. He has announced he is now running for Norfolk DA. Now, I've seen some pretty credible people online, including Tim Bradle, say that Morrissey is not going to be running in this coming election cycle. And I would be shocked if he did. I would be so shocked.
He hasn't raised any money.
He hasn't raised any money, but also, like, he only can lose. I mean, he has nothing to gain by running again. He's not going to win, and it's going to be embarrassing. So,
and he's been hiding under a rock since the
100% trial, so. He has.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
So this guy came out, Adam Deitch, and he put out a campaign ad yesterday as we're taping this, basically talking directly about this, saying, I know what's been going on. Again, paraphrasing. There's a lot of lack of public trust and issues in this office. And I and my agenda going in will be to restore honor, dignity, and, you know, proper action to this place. And I saw this and I thought, you know, a couple of things. It is an interesting move to go from being a prosecutor to at the federal level to a prosecutor at like the county level for state cases. That's a very interesting career trajectory. It's a political choice because you have to be elected. I wonder how much of it is him. This whole thing, it's like there are things we will never know. We will never know some things about the federal investigation until and unless there is an indictment. So he might be led by frustration about the fact that this case was shelved for the time being. And I just want to remind viewers again, you can deny it all you want, but it is in fact true. And if you ask someone who works for the Trump administration, they would tell you that it's true.
Yes.
That in February of 2025, just before it was announced that the federal case looking into the John O'Keefe murder was closed, the Trump administration sent out a memo to all the U.S. attorney's offices, and they have effectively they stopped several investigations into police departments. They stopped investigations that would have led to consent decrees, and they have since dismantled the public integrity unit. Sure, the unit itself, does it still exist on paper? Yeah, but people have been moved to other kinds of cases. And this is very public. This is not a conspiracy theory. So it is likely, it's not unlikely, that this case was a civil rights or public integrity case. And both of those kinds of cases have been all but ceased since Trump came into office, unless they are on behalf of pro-Trump actors. Now, again, this is not an anti-Trump thing that I'm saying. It is a true thing. And this is, I believe, why the case was paused. I don't think that they told, I don't think they specifically told Hank Brennan, I will never believe for a second that we have closed the investigation, because that is not a thing that they do. But I do believe.
They certainly didn't tell Jennifer McCabe.
Yeah, I believe that they were told that we are maybe not taking any action at this point or something like that. Anyway, so this guy is now, he worked on that case, and he is now running for Norfolk County DA. I think he's got a good chance of winning, given just what I've seen in terms of traction already for his campaign. What do you think?
I'm torn. I think that he knows it's sort of an easy win, because I don't think Morrissey would ever win. And if he can say he worked on the federal investigation into this, he's going to have a lot of people on his side. I don't know where his political leanings are. We don't normally know with any kind of feds what their political leanings are. So
he's going to have to run
as
a party person. So he's probably going to be a Democrat, because nobody wins when they're Republican. And usually the Democratic primary is essentially the election in Massachusetts.
Yeah. And I was about to say, I'm assuming he's a Democrat, and that's why he stepped away from his cushy job to do this, because he probably doesn't want to be involved in this administration. I don't know. I'm kind of reserving judgment. I assume he's going to win, and I assume that he's going to win because of the fact that he was on this investigation. I don't know what that means for anything. It doesn't seem like anybody was held accountable so far. So I'm frustrated by that.
A lot of the cops have been moved, fired, demoted.
moved, fired, demoted, and had their vacation days taken away. But this was extreme misconduct where someone was facing a life sentence in prison and went to trial twice, and the Commonwealth spent millions of dollars to try to put this woman in prison, and she was innocent. So the fact that nothing came out and nothing was found and nobody was really reprimanded is frustrating to me.
But they may not have had enough. Yeah, but the timing worked out well for Michael Morrissey, because part of me has always wondered if the reason why he prosecuted Karen Reed again was to delay any action by the feds in their investigation into him. Because one thing that is true is that very often the feds will wait until a state or local case is completed because they don't want to taint the proceeding. They don't want to, you know, right, be involved in the proceeding because it's two different jurisdictions. So by charging and by keeping the charges in place and trying her again, Morrissey could have been a tactic to delay any kind of action there. Slowing things down is a very, very classic, obviously legal tactic. It's a classic regulatory tactic. Sure. How often have you heard is something is poisonous, but we need more research to make sure? Like, that is a classic tactic. So he really kind of lucked out if that was the case, that Trump was then elected. I mean, everybody was saying that if Trump was elected, the federal investigation into the Karen Reed case would likely cease. Even Turtle Boy said that when he was on my show. Like, that was a known thing. And I don't necessarily think that he was banking on Trump being elected, but certainly a new administration period brings its own upheaval. So to push the trial, to do it again, to have it go into the new year, to have it be February, March after the inauguration, like, it really worked out well for him.
Yeah, and I think it falls in line with sort of what we're seeing, you know, with this. We have one other major story that I didn't put it in our notes, but this week the Congress voted unanimously, except for one guy, to have a bill to release the Epstein files, and Donald Trump has signed it. The issue, though, is again, powerful men using their power to sort of take advantage of the system and the people in the system. And I heard another story this week as it pertains to people being pulled off their federal jobs and put in other places, like what we're just talking about. But the FBI, there were several FBI agents who are very, very, very close to breaking up a sex trafficking ring. And they have found videos, and I hate to talk about this, but they've found videos of a small child, and they are this close to identifying her and figuring out where she is. And then they were pulled off of sex trafficking and put into ICE.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've been, the stories that I've been hearing this week are that these poor agents who put so much into trying to help these young children are now having to basically walk away from these cases they've spent years on, and being that close to identifying someone's child and where they might be, to go work for immigration. They're trying desperately on nights and weekends to find this child. So on their own time, they're trying to find this child. So in that, you know, situation, it's hurting that kid. It's hurting those agents. But in, you know, Morrissey's situation, it sounds like it helped him, maybe. I don't know.
It did. But it helped him tremendously.
Again, it's men in power sort of, you know, gumming up the works. It's the same thing that Murdaugh did. You know, anytime
Murdaugh.
He needs...
Mandy Matney would be so mad at you. It's Murdaugh.
I know, it's Murdaugh. Alec. Yellick. Yellick Merck. Yellick Merck. Anytime that he needed to find some more money, he figured out a way to postpone proceedings, to slow things down. It's a tactic. It's what, you know, the Speaker of the House just did so that they wouldn't have to release the Epstein files. He didn't swear in Grijalva for what, I don't know how many days it was after she got elected, but he wouldn't swear her in, so she couldn't be that vote.
Yeah.
They didn't need the vote. It was unanimous, except for that one dude.
Well, they didn't need to vote at all because I think folks know this, but like, there doesn't have to be a bill to release the Epstein files.
No, there doesn't.
The president is in charge of the Justice Department. The Justice Department is part of the executive branch, and the executive branch has its own ability just to say, yeah, but make these public. There didn't have to be a vote at all.
He's in charge of the DOJ, except he's not supposed to be telling the attorney general.
He's not supposed to be directing them how to do investigations and who to investigate. Yeah, there's a this is a and by the way, the Supreme Court has ruled that he has more power. The presidency has more power
immunity
than it would have had before their ruling. So we can say very fairly he's not supposed to. They're not supposed to. Not supposed to. But if in fact the highest court of the land says it's not unconstitutional, then it isn't. Like, that's how the Supreme Court works. So, you know, there's a lot of questions there, but like, yes, delay, priorities of criminal
move people
justice
around.
Shifting. Yes, yes.
Take
that,
them
that's
off
all
of important cases. Yeah, bullshit like that. So anyway,
we're
going to
get some sidebars,
well,
which is going to have a lot of mention of federal shit in
Cyber.
It too.
Sidebar. I'll allow it. Okay, I have two questions for you before we get into the meat of this episode. And that is, I hear that you have heard from John DePietro. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, this is like a famous conversation between you and I. You can give me such shit about it. So I tweeted something about John DePietro a few weeks ago.
How do you explain who John DePietro is for those in our audience who do not know who this man is?
John DePietro is a former radio host from Rhode Island who in about a little less than 20 years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, had a scandal. He had a talk show in Rhode Island, and there was this scandal that everybody in media in New England talked about because, you know, I heard about it when I started working radio in 2010, so it must have been just before that. But he... There are these ratings books. Nielsen is the sort of gold standard of ratings in radio and TV. But the reason that those ratings matter, and I'm sorry I'm getting into the weeds, but very telling about this person. The ratings matter because it's not just a question of saying I'm number one or I'm number two in the market. It's how the station sells ads to potential advertisers. They say, this is how many people are listening. This is like... FCC, like, this is a big fucking deal to not fuck with your ratings book. So, for instance, if I have gotten Nielsen books at my house and they pay you like $2, it's like illegal for me to fill out that survey. Like, I cannot do it because I work at a radio station, right? So it was discovered after his show was deemed to be something like second in the market, that several of the diaries, the Nielsen diaries, had come from one address, which was his address.
Right.
And then later, he told the media that it was his wife, unbeknownst to him, who had filled out all those diaries and sent them in. So this was like, this is how I knew who he was before all this started. And when I saw him sort of pop up in the Karen Reed-verse, I was like, oh, that's that guy. That's what he's doing now.
He's on Court TV quite a bit talking about Karen.
He was, yeah. And he has a blog, YouTube channel, all that same stuff. And his typical fare is like listening to the scanner and going on the street and getting scandalous footage that's very often tinged with a lot of racism. All the stuff you would imagine, like using, you know, coded, barely coded dog whistle language around things. And, you know, I wouldn't call it highbrow. I mean, a lot of people aren't doing highbrow stuff, but his is like not good. He also, by the way, we know is cozy with the Alberts, although right. One of his texts to me, he claimed that's not to be true. We've seen photos of him. We saw a photo with him notably having lunch with Brian Albert at Patriot Place, etc. And he was one of the most virulent, strong, loud-mouthed anti-Karen Reed media types on the internet sphere. And he would say things that just weren't true.
Right.
He was reporting, he was in court during the trial. And on days where Hank Brennan would have an objectively, not by my measure, but an objectively bad day where something would go like really wrong, DePietro would say, he's a genius. He had that whole jury in the palm of his hand. And like literally every other reporter in court from major outlets all the way down to Turtle Boy were like, oh, it was a fucking disaster today for the prosecution in the Karen Reed case. But he was so enamored with the idea of being close to Brennan, close to the Alberts.
Sure.
There's a story that he was catfished into thinking that someone representing Hank Brennan was corresponding with him, and he like carried on that correspondence forever. This is just people. This is not how journalism works. This is not how journalists work. And he's also just not. He doesn't come across as a person with good intentions in any way. So, I tweeted something about him. I'll open it.
Read the tweets.
So.
Bring the receipts. Read the tweets.
Stupid DMs from John DePietro. So I tweeted about him. Wait, have you read them yet? No.
Oh, shit.
I tweeted about him in... Oh, so there was recently a video that was posted of him being chased around by some young kids on one of these scanner reporting outings and them calling him names. And I tweeted, I frown on this kind of thing usually, but I genuinely feel he's earned it.
Uh-oh.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuel. Points TC.
And he Uh-oh. Wrote back to me in a DM, I have earned it. Why don't you grow up? Netflix and NPR? What he's referring to there is my bio on Twitter says I make a right. you know, I make a podcast for Netflix and I work not at NPR, but at New Hampshire Public Radio. And right. he clearly is, I think, not clearly, but to me it read like he's trying to intimate, like, I know where you work. Grow up, whatever it is. And by the way, calling people's workplaces, calling out people's workplaces is a very common tactic among like the,
sure.
This whole yeah. crowd of people. Anyway, so I wrote back to him. Do you want to hear what I wrote? Is this interesting to people? Okay.
This is interesting to me.
Hi, John. As I said, I do frown on it. Being called a pedo in public isn't cool at best. And as far as I know, that accusation is unfounded. So that nickname is far from appropriate. So if that's what bothers you about my tweet, I apologize if you thought I was endorsing that particular sentiment. And of course, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. As someone who frequently confronts criticism and negative reviews for my own work, I mistakenly assumed you had a thick skin and likely didn't search for secondhand replies on the internet that relate to you. He was not tagged in my tweet about him, by the way. Right. I don't do that and don't recommend it for anyone who stands behind their work. But telling me to, quote, grow up is a choice, especially when I was clearly being cheeky, and especially because of your well-documented track record as a media figure. You've committed documented ratings fraud, a story I followed at the time, as did a lot of people working in news and radio in New England, threw around, quote, FCC rules that don't actually exist while on camera, tried again on camera to get out of consequences for a fender bender, and worked very hard to use your platform to secure a conviction for Karen Reed, even going as far as reporting untrue observations about the testimony, mm-hmm. the jury, Brennan's in-court performance, and much more. And then you publicly met the homeowner on whose lawn John O'Keefe died for a meal. If you were interviewing him at that meeting for a story you haven't yet published, I awaited eagerly. I was not saying anyone deserves being chased around and called names, but consider whether being better and being an honest, good faith actor might be a path to stuff like that not happening as often. That kind of thing doesn't just occur out of the ether. Have a great night, John. That's what I wrote back.
Good. Measured, detailed, factual.
Yeah. Then I got a bunch of DMs. Your reaction is to throw out false accusations against me and tell me not to read comments you make about me. Am I supposed to go and address each false accusation you made? I recognize that we are on opposite sides in the Reed trial, but I didn't realize the extent of which you actually believe the nonsense spewed out by a group of pathological liars.
Oh,
and then he went on and on and on. He refuted the meal thing that I just believed it after being told it. I actually saw a photo of it. So, a fender bender, I called the police and provided my information, blah, 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 blah.
He wasn't going to, though.
Yeah. And then he said, yeah. I overestimated you and did not realize you were one of them. And I said,
oh, Jesus.
Always happy to hear whatever you have to say about what I might be wrong about. And I'm one of who? Because he said, I'm not one of them. I'd love to be a member of some cool social club, but I've never been offered a spot. And then he said he actually wants to have a conversation and just talk, do what you want. Someone flagged your comment on blah, 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 which is why I got it, since we both appeared on Court TV and you do actually work in media. I just wrote back, sure. Like, I was done. But then I kept seeing these notifications in my DMs, and I'm like, I don't want to open them. And you were like, we should have him on the show and talk to him. And I was like, that would mean I would have to open this. If I saw John DePietro on the street, I would 100% talk to him. I am not I'm open to talking to anybody. I was on TV with Kevin Lanahan last night, and I know he's had serious illnesses. I met him in person, and we were in Canton. He was perfectly nice. We shook hands before and after our thing on TV. Like, this is what he does. He's anti-Karen Reed.
It's entertainment.
About it. And it's his job, you know, to go on media and talk about it. This is what DePietro does. It's his job to go on media and talk about it. It is my right as a citizen of the United States and as a fellow media person to criticize his tactics. And it is also my right to talk to him or not talk to him. He wants to talk on the phone. You think I should. So
I think I said this. I think that if you're going to talk to DePietro, because you know he's going to go and put his little spin on it, that you need to tell him that you want it recorded and you need to record it and you need to release that recording so that there's no confusion.
That's not really my deal. Like, I'm fine having private conversations with people that are,
but it wouldn't be private.
Yeah. I'm sure that we talk though and it would be benign and fine, but I'm also not interested in debating. That's what he wants. This is the thing. There are some people, and say what you want about Kevin Lanahan. You know how you get a vibe that someone is like, they believe they're acting in good faith, right? I don't know if Lanahan believes he's acting, but he certainly seems to me, from my few encounters with him, that he believes what he's saying and he believes he's acting in good faith. That is not the impression that John DePietro gives, because he says things that are so patently on their face in the moment false. And he weaponizes his platform in a way that is extremely distasteful. And he criticizes Turtle Boy for things that he then does. Like, you know, you can't, you know, it's like you can't anoint yourself a hero in a story when you're fallible. One of the things that really bothers me about a lot of these people, and this is why, you know, I'm not a big fan of LawTubers. Like, I don't watch Nurse Kim. I don't watch Melanie Little. I sort of like, you know, get clips when they're...
get it all from me.
But I do... One of the things I like about Nurse Kim in particular is that Nurse Kim will say when she doesn't know something. She'll be like, you know, she's very open about it. She knows what she doesn't know. She knows what she does know. She knows what she thinks.
Sure.
And a lot of people in this space, even people I don't agree with, are like that. They believe they're acting in good faith, you know, and I just don't think that a conversation with him would be him saying, you know, I believe I'm acting in good faith here, but maybe it would be. Maybe it would be. But I haven't worked up to it yet.
I think people get their talking points from the leaders and they do whatever they can to get those talking points out. Yeah, John DePietro reminds me of, do you know Scott Jennings?
No.
He's a GOP strategist and pundit, and he has his own podcast. He's always on CNN on the late night shows where they
I'd probably
just
know him
like,
by sight then is what you're saying.
You would. He has gone he went from being this like sort of anti-Trump to being this like mega Trump supporter. And he literally just goes on Abby Phillips' show every night and he walks out these talking points, and they all sound like talking points, and they go against, he contradicts himself in the moment. He does like, you know, circular reasoning and whataboutism. And it's all the tactics of like that Kellyanne Conway taught everyone in this party.
Right. And I'll say it's like, Marjorie Taylor Greene has sent some insane shit since she's come on the political scene. She sent some insanely racist shit, some insanely anti-Semitic shit. She talked about Jewish space lasers.
She believes anti-trans.
She believes that people are controlling the weather. Like, she has said some insane things. I believe that she believes the things she is saying. I didn't used to believe that about her. I believe it now.
Yes.
Because even though I know it's a tactic, even though I know she's probably making her own political moves, she is willing to say, I said those things and I believe some of them still and I don't believe other things still. Like, it's like the fallibility is important to me.
It's Megyn Kelly saying that 15-year-old girls
Yeah.
are
fair game.
Not 8-year-old girls. Yeah. They are young women who are fair game, and that you're not a pedophile.
That's not exactly what she said, but it's certainly how it came out. That's how it.
But that's my point. My point is that she went on her program and justified.
Yeah.
Because that's what she was told to do. She doesn't believe that. Megyn Kelly was part of the lawsuit against Fox News for workplace
sexual harassment.
She doesn't believe it herself.
Yeah.
So why is she parroting these fucked up talking points about children? Yeah. It's the same thing that DePietro
does. Yeah, I mean, you get, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, when there's an issue, operatives, comms people get a memo.
Yes.
That's like, and we it's funny because we've seen it when people give congressional testimony. We've seen the memo, the notes. Like sometimes it'll be like, it's like, talk about this. Focus on this person's eyelash. Like it'll say something stupid. Like that's, and that is, it's not genuine. And I don't know what John DePietro's personal life is like. I don't know how he thinks. All I know is what I have seen and read that he has written. I have seen on his videos and have seen him on Court TV and I have seen him on social media. And it does not seem like a genuine actor. And it's like, you can, and it's funny because I'm not in a, whatever cult that people think Turtle Boy has going on.
Right.
But I do know he certainly has obfuscated publicly. He certainly has whatever. And he also has said why he's obfuscating publicly. Mm-hmm. It's not a good look, but it's a look he fully embraces. And he's like, I'm a fucking douchebag sometimes. I am. Like, I am. Yeah. Revenge is my number one motive. So it's like, even if you hate him, you have to admire the fact that he owns his character. And he owns.
And that is what I'm asking for from politicians and pundits and folks like John DePietro. I'm asking for honesty about who they truly are and what they truly want.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be that difficult.
I could be wrong. Maybe I'll talk to him and it'll be super nice.
I mean, you might be wrong, but I've seen videos of him off the cuff where he is just talking to people like on the steps of the courthouse. And he's a complete DB. And that's my opinion. But, you know, like a talking point, basically, if you ask somebody, well, why did Donald Trump call that reporter a piggy? Why did he say quiet piggy? And the answer out of 17 people's mouths will be, he's just really upset that we're not focusing on affordability.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. That's why he called her a piggy. He's just, it has nothing to do with how much, you know, what he thinks about women. It's that he wants us to focus on affordability and not the Epstein files. Anyway, all right, we have gone off on so many tangents today.
I know. But let me just say one last thing about DePietro.
Yes, please.
I don't ever look for my mentions of myself on social media. And I would just advise somebody who's in the media who's put themselves in the public spotlight, which I have. I mean, I have several podcasts. I've written books. I work in the media by day. If you look at the criticisms of my main podcast, Crime Writers On, if there's negative comments, a lot of them are about me. It's about the way I laugh, how I lead the show, blah, blah, blah. 10 years ago, I used to look at that and be like, man, should I be doing something differently? And then I've come to realize if you're not ruffling people, then you're not doing it right usually. Or if there are people who really love you and there are people who really hate you, like you're probably like onto something, right? But like,
right.
I have sort of learned that, like, if you put yourself in the position to be a public person, you have to be able to take it. You have to. You have to be able to have someone say that you're ugly, have someone say that you're stupid, have someone say that you don't know what you're talking about or that you're lying. You have to. And you just have to be able to water off a duck and keep doing what you're doing if you believe in what you're doing. And the advice I would give to DePietro is if he wants to stay doing the kind of work he's doing, being the kind of personality that he monetizes being, don't look for comments about yourself when you're not tagged in them, especially. It does not lead anywhere good other than other people talking about you on their podcasts.
No, ask Mandy Matney how she had to deal with so many comments about Vocal Fry when she was trying to tell the truth about Alec Murdoch.
Fun fact, you know, Nancy Mace used to own Fitz News.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I just learned that. Anyway.
Whoa.
Digression.
Okay. All right. I think it is time to get into this complaint. We're already at an hour right now.
Great.
So we gotta do this. I think we should have maybe just one quick little dance break from Ruby before we get going.
Yes.
We're gonna do the Karen Reed complaint, right, Rubes? She's like, can I please go back to sleep?
She's like, 40 how many pages?
Okay.
Dog break.
I want to say this right off the top. I love the way whoever wrote this, I'm assuming it was Alan Jackson or someone. It might have been her civil attorney, like her lead civil attorneys. I love the way, as a writer myself, how they broke this down and told this story.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think everybody needs to understand right off the top is that Karen Reed is civilly suing. She is the plaintiff against Michael Proctor, Yuri Bukenik, Brian Tully.
In their personal capacities as citizens, not cops.
In their personal capacity as citizens. That's the footnote on the first page. Or is it the footnote on the first page?
It's right there.
No, it doesn't. It's right there. It's right on the top of who she's listed. And then Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, Jennifer McCabe, Matt McCabe, and as I said, Brian Higgins. So she's suing all of these people. And this is just sort of the whole thing. She's suing all of these people because they trampled on her constitutional rights. She is alleging that they were all involved in a cover-up to put charges of murder on her and send her away to jail when they themselves, some of them, were a party to what actually happened to John O'Keefe. And so the way that this is broken down is basically the complaint is the first section. So they tell you, Karen tells you what she thinks happened and how it happened. And then it's broken down. Yes, Ruby. And then it's broken down into each person that she names and what they did wrong with specific examples and which rights of hers they violated. And then it sort of ends with, and here are all the things they did to violate my rights. So here are all my rights that were violated. And then finally, it's what she's asking for.
Right.
In damages.
Right. And we should say the Massachusetts State Police and Canton Police Departments will be added to this lawsuit, but they have to be,
yes.
They have to go through
that's the footnote.
First. So, right. Yes, the answer is yes. And all these sections, the paragraphs therein are very well organized, very neat.
Yes.
And there are some nuggets hidden in them for sure.
For sure. So basically, the beginning, the theory is very similar to our theory of what happened. I'm going to try to do a Cliff Notes version of it here, but basically, Karen and John were out at C.F. McCarthy's and the waterfall. Everyone was drinking. Brian Higgins, Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, Matt and Jen McCabe, and several others were all out there drinking with them. Jen McCabe invited them back to the Albert's home, Brian Albert's home at 34 Fairview, to sort of keep the party going. Karen was never really convinced that they were welcome there. She and John drove over to the house. He said he was going to go inside and check things out. She waited. She watched him walk up to the door, one of two doors at the front of the house. There were three doors
notable.
At the front of the house. Notable. She watched him walk up to the doors. He went into either the house or the garage. She waited. He didn't come out. She left him there because she thought that he had decided to stay and that she wasn't welcome, maybe. Plus, keep in mind, they were all drunk. And then what transpired inside the house was that John got into an altercation. And one of my notes says that Brian Albert was, they believe Brian Albert was the one who got into an altercation with. We don't know that for sure. They may have evidence of it. Gets into an altercation. At some point he falls backward and hits his head on a hard surface that causes a counter coup injury to the back of his head, blunt
contra
force trauma.
Contra coup.
Sorry. I always say counter
coup. I practiced it during the trial.
Thank you. Rebecca fact checks me in real time and I appreciate it.
I also vibe check you in real time sometimes.
Yeah, you do sometimes. And then at some point, Chloe, the German Shepherd, who was Brian Albert's dog, attacked probably to protect her owners. And that's how John got the dog bites on his arm. They are specifically saying that John was punched in the face in this complaint, which I find interesting. And at some point, they all decided, this is sort of how they laid it out in the complaint. all of these people, most of these people were law enforcement, so they knew the kind of trouble they were going to be in if they didn't do something about this. And that's why they didn't call 911. They decided to cover it up and they decided to pin it on Karen Reed. And so at that point, that's when the planning actually began. And they allege in this complaint that Matt McCabe may have helped move John O'Keefe's body, which I found interesting.
Would you know what paragraph that's in approximately? Sorry, I got my readers on because I am blind.
I do not, but I have it in my notes once we get to Matt McCabe because I broke down what all of them, what they all did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so KR alleges he may have assisted in moving JOK's body and or concealing evidence. We know that they all tried to conceal evidence. Another thing that was mentioned in this complaint is that Nicole may have also destroyed evidence. To me, so I want to make this clear to the audience. What's happening in this complaint is they are making these very specific allegations against these people, which means they either have the evidence to back it up or they are expecting to get the evidence in discovery and depositions.
Yes.
In order to prove their case.
Or they know for sure that they can convince a jury that it's more likely this happened than not, which is the standard in a civil case. One of the things that's interesting to me about this complaint is it does what I have always done, which is separates out the police misconduct from whatever happened at the house.
Yes, absolutely.
I really appreciate that because I have always thought, long thought, have said it on TV, have said it here, that Proctor did not start this thinking that any Alberts were involved. I really think that's true. I just think this is the kind of cop he was. I got a whiff of this is what's happened, and now I'm going to make sure that that person goes down for it by doing all sorts of stuff to make it a slam dunk. Maybe at some point he became aware or ran a suspect or whatever that there was something really wrong here. It doesn't matter. To me, that doesn't even matter how much he was involved. Yeah. But the bottom line is they wanted him to investigate the case because they knew he would believe them when they said certain things, and that's exactly what happened. So whether or not he was complicit in the actual post-murder stuff doesn't matter, and I'm very glad they separated it out because it is very hard for people to buy a cop participating in a conspiracy like this with non-cops. Well, I mean, Albert was a cop, but